General Neem Reel 4. Just to finish this point about the relationship between the officers and the men, you've said that you would expect and did receive military intelligence information from other ranks. Was there in fact any regular system or method by which you referred to them for information like this? I'm sorry, I put the question rather badly. I'm wondering in addition to taking information if they volunteered it, whether anything positive was done to discover whether in fact they had acquired information which might be of military importance. Like men coming back from the front, would they be questioned about conditions and things like that?
Well, no, not especially, because they would be always, you see, the field company would broke down into sections, each of which originally, when the before there were a lot of casualties, had an officer in charge, and the officer had his 40 men under him, and they would always come back with the officer in charge, and the officer would have heard of anything from the men. They were detailed out on jobs, perhaps on a certainly with the front, or if they were big working parties, there would be an NCO and some sappers on one bit and some more on another, and so on. And the officer would be patrolling along, keeping an eye on the work. Well, he would have heard in the course of the night or the day what had been happening. So the information would have been collected from them.
What would happen then, as often must have been the case, if the officer was killed in action?
Then the sergeant, his sergeant would take charge, and he would go on and so on. If the sergeant was killed or wounded, the corporal would be
fine
and would collect any information.
As a regular soldier and a pre-war professional soldier, what was your opinion of the various groups that came into the army during the First World War? If we could sort of go through them one by one and talk about the territorials, the volunteers, the conscripts, what was your reaction professionally to these as a group of soldiers, starting with the territorials?
The territorial divisions. The best territorial divisions within a matter of, I was going to say weeks, or at any rate a few months of getting to France, were as good as regular division, and became first class. And I mean, I know that because, as I say, I went from being a sapper officer with a regular division to become a brigade major in a territorial division, and in the closest touch with the battalions, the four battalions of my brigade, and they were first class. Actually, when they were first sent to France, this London territorial division, the battalions had been. The division had been split up and a battalion attached to different regular divisions, and thereby they'd had something like 6 months attachment to a regular brigade, and so they'd had that training. And when they were collected again together and made a division, their own division again, they were absolutely first class. And the personnel, take it on the whole, more intelligent than the average regular soldier. And so they were absolutely first class. They became a first class division. And in battle, they could be counted on to undertake any task.
Now, you say that the best of the territorial divisions were as good as any of the regular
Yes.
ones, but what about the average territorial
Well,
unit?
oh, I think the same thing applies.
It
But the,
does.
when they'd had a certain amount of training in the theatre of war, they became excellent.
Okay, fine. Now, going on to the volunteer armies, what sort of impression, professionally, did the volunteers make on you?
Oh, very, very good, because at the end of the war, no, when, what was it, the last 10 months of the war, I was GSO1 Chief of Staff of a new army division, and they were first class. We did attacks against the Germans as successfully as any regular division would have done it by that time. Of course, they'd had by then, the time I joined them, they'd had I can't tell you certain, they'd had a couple of years in the theatre of war, and as material, they were excellent officers and men.
Were you able to gain any impression of what they were like when they first came out?
Oh, I saw something of new army divisions when they first came out, and of course they were quite well trained, but they wanted experience of war conditions and experience of trench warfare, especially under war conditions. But the material was good. They were I think the rank and file were top notch, and the officers wanted experience.
What about the conscript armies? What sort of impression did they make on you?
Oh, I think they were just the same. I mean, they were well. Let's see now. I don't know that I can differentiate. I don't know when the conscript armies. You know, what division number? I mean, I had the 30th division. I knew. I know whether they were volunteers or conscripts.
All right.
I don't know when the conscripts began to come in.
Yes.
Because they were merely put into recruit depots in England and fed out to their units.
Yes. Would I be right then in summarising what you're saying? Is that regardless of whether they were regulars, territorials, volunteers, or conscripts, their military effectiveness, as far as you could see, was much on the same level.
Yes. Yes.
Apart from their military,
provided they went to a decent depot and were properly trained, they became good soldiers.
Did it often happen that they didn't get that opportunity?
No, I don't think so.
Yes. Apart from question of their military effectiveness, was the actual style and behaviour and quality of the territorial and conscript and volunteer units different in any way? Could you notice anything different about their sort of ways of behaving?
I think the territorials, but mind you, I'm dealing with well-educated. The territorials of the London Division were most of them more highly educated, in that a great number of them were, you know, London clerks and all that sort of thing, better educated than the average territorial country private soldier. So that I would say, but from what I saw of other territorial units, I think there's not much to choose between any. They're all decent English soldiers. That's the impression I got. And take it all round, they all behaved pretty well in a foreign country.
Fine.
I never heard any troubles. Heard of riots and troubles.
Yes. So change the subject completely now. What was your attitude during the First World War to conscientious objection?
Well, I don't think I had any. I mean, I heard about them, and I think I was young then. I think my feelings were, I should have made them jolly well serve in the army. I mean, I objected to them.
There wasn't much sympathy for them.
No.
Now, this is a question which relates to any part of the period which you spent on the Western Front. Was there at any time any criticism of any kinds of operations or activities that were carried on at the Western Front?
The only serious criticisms or complaints I heard were against Gough's Fifth Army. It got to a stage where everyone hated the idea of going to Gough's Fifth Army. They thought that he was a slaughterer, and I remember that well.
And that was a contemporary opinion.
Yes. I know when we were, let's see, what was it? What was I with then?
This would be about the time of 3rd Ypres, I suppose, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, I think it was the 15th Corps, and we were ordered up there. And it was a question of whether we were going to be under the 2nd Army or the 5th Army. And we all prayed that we should be with the 2nd Army, not the 5th Army, because they all, everyone worshipped Plumer,
mm-hmm.
who was commanding the 2nd Army, and they all loathed Gough.
Yes.
Well, they loathed the methods of fighting of the Fifth Army, and it was regarded as a slaughterhouse.
And the Fifth Army was singular in this respect, was it?
Yes.
You didn't hear those kind of criticisms against any other army?
No.
What about other activities? Was there anything at all which, at the time, was criticised by the men who had to take part in it? Things like trench raids or anything?
No, not... Not especially. I mean, there were some divisions that had a reputation for successful raids, and others that being less successful at it. But that was only one to heard just local back chat about.
Good. In your experience of staff work during the First World War, were you at the time aware of any deficiencies of the system, or do you think it did its job well?
It varied from formation to formation to a considerable extent, and I did hear sometimes complaints from people I knew that they never saw their staff, they didn't visit the front line, and so on. But I think that's the chief complaints that one heard. Well, all I know is that
was that a fairly common complaint? Would you say?
No, it varied considerably, and I think it probably depended to some extent on the commander and the senior staff officer of the formation, whether he insisted on people going up and seeing things, or whether the commander himself went up and saw things up the front. Actually, as I had early in the war been a frontline soldier, so to speak, when I got on the staff, and then I went gradually on the staff of an infantry brigade, then division, then corps, I was in the habit of going to see things in the front, so I kept on going up to the front. It was difficult when I got for a time, some months, on an army headquarters staff. It was almost impossible to do much going right up the front, distances were too great, it was too big a front line, and there was so much office work and visiting headquarters of corps, which you had to do, and division, that I seldom got up to the front. But from formation lower down, I always got up to the front line.
Well, as a staff officer yourself, was this kind of regular contact with the front lines expected of you?
Yes, well, I think that the front line troops were always, I won't say expected, but they were always delighted to see somebody from divisional staff and that sort of thing. I don't think they expected anything from, well, I don't suppose they really knew who was who, but they were always delighted to see somebody from, say, the divisional staff up at the front.
Yes.
And in some divisions, oh, quite a many divisions, the divisional commander himself used to go up and visit the front line fairly frequently. Mm. And, of course, the troops thought no end of that. They could see the divisional commander coming and having a word here and there with the frontline soldier.
But what I'm really getting at is, was it regarded as a part of your job and something which you would do, being responsible to the senior staff officer, to make regular contacts with the front so as to have an up-to-date picture of what was happening there?
No, I wouldn't say that under the conditions of trench warfare that it was an essential part of your job to make frequent visits to the front line, provided you occasionally went to see the conditions and that you had people under you whom you insisted on going and making reports. I'd put it like that. I don't think you wouldn't expect the chief of staff of a division, a colonel, general staff, to go and make frequent visits to the front line, unless he wanted to.
No, but would you expect officers under his command to do that on his behalf on a regular basis?
Yes.